John will be justice and justice of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is out of session for some good time.
Good morning, be seated, please.
First case on our calendar is 99-245, Martin Schumacher v. Schumacher v. Aaron Snyder, Motors New Juncture, and Mr. Matthews. No telephone. No telephone. Please leave the court.
Your argument seems to me to be best based on the concept of your client being a third-party beneficiary of the contract between the leasing company and motorists.
I think that's one way to argue that he is a third-party beneficiary of the contract, but I also believe that by virtue of occupying an insured vehicle, that if you look at the underinsured motorist provision in the policy, it states that anybody occupying an insured vehicle is insured for underinsured motorist purposes.
Okay.
And I believe he also has standing on that basis to argue that, you know, if they had made the offer, it may have been accepted, but if the offer was not made and expressly rejected, then it's implied by law. Even under the terms of the policy itself, he would fall within the definition of uninsured or uninsured motorist portion of the policy.
But it has to still be as a result of the policy. I mean, the statute says essentially thou shalt offer coverage, so it's through the policy that he'd be.
I believe it is through the policy.
I mean, it's deemed, I understand that it's deemed covered. UIM is deemed offered by.
I don't think you need to be a named insured because often you're going to have passengers who are not people who contracted directly with the insurance company. But because by virtue of occupying an insured vehicle, they will have, I would expand it because to deny the standing, you can't even make the argument. Some argue that it should have been offered and rejected. I realize he wasn't in this particular instance a passenger, but I think the ruling of the court below had much broader implications beyond my client. He happened to be in an insured vehicle, but not insured for liability purposes, but occupying an insured vehicle. You know, I think passengers are more often going to be in the situation where they're in the vehicle, not insured under the liability section of the policy, but still making underinsured motorist claims.
Yeah.
And some of those claims, I believe, will be statutorily based.
If we determine that he, because he has to be related to the policy to be offered that, to benefit from the requirement that the UIM be expressly rejected, okay, he's got to get that. If we deem that to be the reasoning, the rationale that permits him to be treated as an insured and insured for UIM, then are we in a quandary about the contradictory contract language in his contract with his lessor that says, but you're only, as between us, we say you only get this much?
I'm not sure that contract, at least as I've analyzed it, really makes
you think it doesn't.
One or the other. I mean, to take the opposing viewpoint, if Relay Express had said, we are going to provide uninsured motorist coverage, and we are going to provide you with liability coverage. And they did not do that. They did not secure that policy with motorists. I don't believe we have any right to claim with motorists that, really expressed that they would give it to us. I really view that contract as really not being relevant. I mean, for example, if he had had a passenger in his car that day, I don't view that passenger as in any different position than my client would have been. And he would have had no contract at all with Relay Express. You know, I think that passenger standing to make a claim or not make a claim would be virtue of occupying an insured vehicle. And then the question then becomes, did that policy provide underinsured motorist coverage, either by its own terms or by implication of law, if the insurance company did not follow with the mandatory requirements under the law?
Well, this was a summary judgment. Wasn't the burden on Motors Mutual to prove that they had to establish that they had been offered and rejected underinsured?
Yes, they were. There was no evidence that Motors Mutual put in the record that they, number one, offered it, or number two, received any rejection of that. And I believe there was a court decision out of this court that suggested in 1996 that really ought to be in writing with the offer and the rejection to really serve the purpose of showing whether Ohio law in fact is being complied with or not, determining the mandatory offer of underinsured motorist and uninsured motorist coverage.
Don't we have to get to a threshold issue, though, before we ever get to whether or not there is coverage, whether or not there's uninsured or underinsured coverage in the policy? For instance, in your worthy adversary's brief on page 10, he says the insurance policy in question indicates very clearly that appellant is not an insured and his vehicle is not a covered auto while he operates the vehicle. Policy also indicates it does not apply to any liability assumed by Relay Express, Inc. If, in fact, he's not an insured, we don't care what the policy says, do we?
Well, I do think he's an insured, and he is occupying an insured vehicle.
Well, that's why I'd like, your statements are so definitive and so are his. They both can't be right.
Well, I think their argument is this. The vehicle that my client had was insured under the policy, and I don't believe Motors Mutual disputes that. I think what they say, then, though, is if you look at the definition of insured for liability purposes, that the owner of the hired vehicle himself is not covered for liability purposes under the policy if he had caused the accident. Similar to the Sealander decision that was issued by this court this year, the insured in that particular instance was driving, I believe, in that instance, a non-owned vehicle. So he was not an insured under the policy for liability purposes, but he did occupy a non-owned vehicle that was otherwise an insured vehicle under the policy, and the insurance company had not offered UIM coverage, so the court implied by an operation of law that, UIM coverage was provided and that there wasn't even any terms in that policy that defined who was an insured for UIM purposes. This policy does define insured for UIM purposes, and it defines it as anybody occupying a covered auto.
I was going to ask him, so now you've already gotten into that, I might as well ask you, too. If he had been at fault in an accident,
correct,
would there have been liability coverage through this policy covering his operation of this vehicle?
I do not believe so, Your Honor.
Now, can you have uninsured coverage where the predicate policy of liability doesn't cover the claimant?
Well, I believe so. I mean, I believe it happens all the time. For example, one of the exclusions that was somewhat common is a family exclusion. So that if I have my family in my car and I'm driving and I negligently cause an accident, there very well may be an exclusion of me and say I have no liability coverage at all. And very frequently, the only avenue of compensation for my family who was injured by my negligence from insurance in that particular instance is to file an underinsured or uninsured motorist claim.
Did your client have his own liability policy?
I believe he did, yes.
Did it contain underinsured coverage?
It might contain underinsured motorist coverage, and I believe in the same limits that the tortfeasor who caused this accident.
So you have the set-off problem under 3937.18H.
He would not have sufficient coverage under his own underinsured motorist policy to provide him any coverage if the law currently stands on the set-off in Ohio. That's correct.
He, I assume, chose the limits of his own policy.
He did, correct.
He could have paid more and gotten higher limits.
No question, he could. We believe that depriving Stanley to injured persons who are occupying covered insured vehicles, depriving them of the standing to make a statutory UIM claim would have far-ranging effect and would greatly restrict the coverage that's now available under Ohio law to both drivers and passengers who are occupying insured vehicles. Such a rule would allow insurance companies to essentially get around Ohio's laws concerning mandatory UIM coverage without penalty or remedy, because the people who are trying to make the claims do not even have standing in the Court of Appeals opinion to even demonstrate that there was no offer and rejection of that coverage, therefore implied by law. We believe that this would be contrary to Ohio public policy as pronounced both by the legislature in the UIM statute and by the decisions of this court. Our reasons for why we believe this should be so is that Ohio law by statute and court decision mandate UIM coverage for every automobile insurance policy issued in the state and every vehicle that's registered in the state. And such coverage is implied by law where it's not expressly provided unless the insurance company meets its burden of establishing that it made an express offer of the coverage and received an express rejection. And there is no evidence that there is mutual put in this record of having done so.
This,
yes.
I thought this policy council did, I mean, that there was, this policy did include underinsured, uninsured, but then they excluded lessee vehicles or lease vehicles.
It's hard to follow, but what they use was symbols, and for some symbols, UIM coverage is listed as being available. For the symbol that we would fall under, which I believe is higher auto, which was number eight is not listed on the declaratory or the declarations page under UIM coverage. That's correct.
So we would be saying that the statute says unless expressly rejected.
Expressly offered
and rejected. And here it apparently was offered and accepted, but not expressly rejected as to some coverage, some vehicles, some insureds, what?
Again, I don't believe there's any evidence in the record that it was offered by the insurance company for higher lines.
But they did buy it. I mean, the policy includes it.
They have said, I want uninsured motorist coverage for this particular vehicle. And that there are some lower Ohio court decisions on this. Demetri, Westfield, William versus Nationwide, we discussed it at page 893. They addressed, I think, precisely the issue that you're raising. I realize this court has not. But I think the rationale that these courts have employed is the correct one, which is, just because an insurer has elected it, you know, UIM coverage for some of its vehicles doesn't mean that the insurance company has complied with its obligation to offer and receive a rejection
for
others. And again, I don't think there's any evidence that Motors Mutual put in the record to show that they complied with that. If they had, I wouldn't really have much of an argument.
Right.
Do you think you fall under the language that defines and describes, quote, hired auto?
Oh, yes. And I don't think there's been any dispute of that in any of the,
So it's clear that there's a lease, he's the lessor to a lessee who has
correct.
A policy of insurance.
Correct.
That doesn't cover him for liability.
Correct. It does cover Relay Express if that vehicle, if my client was driving the vehicle and caused an accident, I believe Relay Express would have liability coverage for that vehicle, for his acts. But he would have to depend for his own liability, I believe, on his own policy.
Right? Don't we assume that the parties agreed and that they must have negotiated this?
Wait,
it was his truck,
just
he makes the roadway, and he drives, and there must have been some negotiating here. Yeah.
I think it's a standard form contract that they offer to these people who drive for them. It's on a pre-printed form where they fill out his name and things on it. I mean, that contract itself never mentioned underinsured motorist coverage one way or the other. It just says Relay Express is going to provide public liability insurance for the vehicle. It doesn't address...
You need to I need to quickly go back two steps, because I think you just told me something different than you told me 5 minutes ago.
Sorry if I didn't know.
The issue, well, it could be me. Probably is. The liability question. I asked you if he was the cause of an accident in this truck, if the liability portion of the lessee's policy would cover that accident. You said no.
Okay. It does and it doesn't. I mean, it would cover the accident. It would cover Relay Express's liability for that accident.
Well, but they're only responsible vicariously through him.
Correct.
So it does cover it.
It does cover it. You're correct. I was thinking more specifically as to my client individually, but it would provide liability coverage.
Well, his own
entities.
Yeah, his own liability coverage would be excess and not primary, would pick it up if the Relay policy wasn't enough.
That's correct.
So the predicate policy does cover liability, and therefore the UM coverage could attach.
And that is our position. I'm sorry I didn't articulate that clearly.
The exclusion then that you answered Justice Douglas's question earlier.
Yeah.
Only is this is his personal auto.
Correct.
That he has an arrangement with his company that he drives it to work.
Correct. He drives it to
work. Well, it stands only to his work related drive.
Well, no, the policy does not limit it to the scope of course of employment. No, it does not. It just insures the vehicles. Does not speak to that issue at all. It's an insured vehicle, and there aren't any particular limits in the policy that would define when it's insured or not insured, except for him driving it. When he's driving it as the owner, by definition, it says an owner is not insured for liability purposes. So, again, it kind of gets back to this.
What does that mean?
Well, I think the vehicle itself is covered. Just as I was explaining earlier, I may not have, just as in the Sealander case, I may not be an insured under the liability portion of the policy, either by definition or by exclusion. But the vehicle itself is insured. Relay Express's vicarious liability for that accident is insured. And passengers and other occupants may be insured for other purposes, but they specifically eliminated him for his negligence directly, by definition. You read through it as an insurer of a liability policy. I'm not trying to confuse it. It is somewhat confusing. The vehicle still is an insured vehicle. They never offered, or was there any rejection of UIM coverage. And if you look at, there are separate definitions of who's an insured, the liability portion of the policy and the UM portion of the policy. And the UM portion of the policy defines insured as anyone who occupies the vehicle, which would include my client, passenger, anyone who is an occupant of that covered vehicle. And it is a covered vehicle for some purposes, although I recognize for other purposes it may not be. But again, I don't think that's unusual. I know the court has struck down family claim exclusion on underinsured motorist coverage, because under the Alexander rationale, that cuts back on the coverage that's mandated by Ohio law. But I think those exclusions still work in the liability exceptions of the policy, because there isn't that same public policy as expressed in the UM statute. So I think you can, and frequently in the past, have situations where people will not be insured under the liability exception of the policy, but will be insured for purposes of making underinsured motorist claim. And then you see, Lander,
I think you can answer that question.
Okay.
Was the tortfeasor absolutely uninsured, or was he under it?
Absolutely uninsured.
So it would not be
a... They did have some coverage, but it would in light of the damages.
So this would be a 3937-18A1 claim as opposed to 2.
Right, it's an underinsured situation, not an uninsured.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews.
Thank you.
No, it's an uninsured, not an underinsured.
I forget what I said.
Okay.
Sorry.
Underinsured. Can't be insured.
Justice, it is my pleasure to be here before you argue this case. Justice Douglas brought up a point.
It's uninsured.
He said that there was a threshold issue. And Justice Douglas, I think that there is a very important threshold issue, several threshold issues that distinguishes this case from the whole entire line of cases from this court on underinsured, uninsured motorist coverage. All of the cases of your written opinions that come out show that there was an accident. They show that an insured suffered an injury. They show that a tortfeasor was negligent. And they show that either the tortfeasor had no liability coverage or insufficient liability coverage. What is missing in this case is any evidence in the record whatsoever of all four of those issues. There's not anything in the record about an accident except for the naked allegations that are contained in the complaint.
Counsel, you tried to knock this case out, did you not, on summary?
Yes.
On the basis that there was no standing to bring?
On the basis that there was no uninsured or underinsured coverage. That was the initial basis of the motion.
And that this claimant had no basis. The claimant had no standing to be in court.
Yes.
Okay. If he has no standing, how is he ever to litigate his rights?
He has no... He would have standing to bring the complaint, but they've got to produce evidence to support the allegations, which they never have done. The record's devoid of evidence of injury to Mr. Schumacher.
So your basis for no standing is that he failed to carry the day at the... was hit by a motion for summary.
Absolutely.
On the operative...
I think that's the threshold issue of the law.
I'm sorry. Judge Hildebrand had a pretty strong dissent that helped this case get the judge on both appeals on the stand.
But I think that was the Court of Appeals decision where they hit Mr. in the third decision. They think it's Appendix 5. That Schumacher had no standing upon which to claim that Motors Mutual had wrongfully denied uninsured coverage to Relay Express. The issue of whether Relay Express had in fact or by operation of law expressly rejected uninsured, underinsured coverage under its policy with Motors Mutual was not dispositive given the factual posture of the case. What the majority in the Court of Appeals was saying is that they have presented facts, and those facts are containing what they have to prove is contained in Revised Code 3937-18. For uninsured, an insured has to prove that he's legally entitled to recover damages. They haven't put forth any evidence to show that they're legally entitled to recover any damages.
Are you standing here telling us that the complaint doesn't allege an accident?
The complaint alleges it, but they rested on the complaint. They haven't produced any evidence whatsoever by deposition transcript, affidavit, answers to interrogatories are not in the record.
Did you not first file a 12B6 motion?
No, I did not file a 12B6 motion.
Okay, you went directly to summary judgment.
Yes.
And there was nothing in the... I didn't even bother going looking at that bare bones complaint because you have to allege there's an accident or it never starts anything.
Everything is alleged in the complaint, but there's nothing that's supported by evidence contained in the record.
So there isn't any affidavit from the plaintiff saying, I was injured?
Nope.
But the motion for summary judgment seemed to be based on the fact that there was no coverage. It wasn't based... I mean, the plaintiff need only come forward with response to respond to whatever the claim challenge is. It seemed to me that the challenge here surrounded coverage from the get-go.
That was the initial purpose of the motion for summary judgment. I believe that puts the burden upon them when I have filed an affidavit, when I have filed a contract between Relay Express and Mark Schumacher, the appellant, when I have filed certified copies of the business auto coverage form and the Ohio uninsured motorist coverage form, that they then have the burden to produce evidence to support the facts that they need to prove at trial.
No. Not. They only have to come back with what you put into question. The only thing you put into question was coverage.
They have never filed any evidence whatsoever.
Well, the only reason you're asking the court to dismiss it is because there's no coverage, not because there was no accident.
That was the initial reason for the motion for summary judgment, but it was the Court of Appeals, and that's been, they've alleged facts in all of their briefs that are not supported by any evidence.
But that was the basis of the Court of Appeals decision.
I believe it was.
Where do you see that? Where do you see that?
I see that in the fact that they say that Mr. Schumacher doesn't have standing given the factual posture of the case.
But then the Court of Appeals refers to the insurance issue, don't they?
Yeah,
I don't see any reference at all to the fact that the Court of Appeals shows damage.
I believe the Court of Appeals said that they didn't even get to the issue of whether it was offered.
Was it argued?
Yes, that was argued. It's been argued all the time. They keep on alleging facts that aren't supported by evidence in the record. In fact, their Supreme Court brief.
I see what you're referring to in the Court of Appeals opinion. It's where they say the issue of whether Relay Express had a fact or by operation law expressly rejected under uninsured or underinsured under its policy with policy was not dispositive given the factual posture of this case. That's what the Court of Appeals is referring to.
Right.
And the dissent is brief.
That's correct. The only evidence that was ever filed in the case, but now and with regards to, underinsured coverage, there's no evidence of tortfeasor's liability limits whatsoever. It's not contained in the record. How can the court make a decision as to whether there's an underinsured issue if the court does not know from evidence that's contained in the record what the underlying...
Going back to it, I mean, your focus was to just find out the coverage of the contract, and that was the summary.
Yes.
The conversation needs to be back, because you're saying contractually, there's no coverage.
There is no coverage for the vehicle while
so
Schumacher.
The focus of what everybody thought they were deciding was that issue.
And at the trial court level, yes. But I think the issue changed when there wasn't evidence presented by the appellants in the record to support their allegations in the complaint.
I think you misunderstand the summary judgment standard, counsel. The only issue to give you judgment was coverage. Not you didn't raise that there were other bases for awarding you judgment.
I haven't ever appealed.
Mm-hmm. You filed summary judgment.
Yes.
Right.
And that was, of course, the initial purpose, as I said, of the motion, but I can't anticipate that the party's not going to file evidence to support facts that it was proved. That's what was the initial basis for the motion. There is no coverage. I don't think that there is any coverage.
Well, let me take you down a different road. Justice Douglas raised this issue of liability coverage. What liability coverage is in this policy that could be predicated for under uninsured owners?
There is no liability coverage whatsoever when Mark Schumacher, the appellant, operates his vehicle.
So this policy is meaningless.
Covers nothing.
What are you charging the premium for?
We charge the premium to Relay Express.
Yeah, for what?
How do we know who's going to be operating the vehicles that they lease? I don't know that there's an assumption.
So you're presuming that he's going to furnish his car to his employer for somebody else to drive. If that happens, you cover it. Otherwise, you don't cover it.
I believe that's correct in the policy.
What do you think your insurance, the company, would think of your description of what you were charging them for? They'd be a little surprised, wouldn't they?
Well, I think that they negotiated the policy that they should be aware of what's in the policy. They're the ones who
obtained and contracted with Motors Mutual for the policy. The policy also contains an exclusion for liability that Relay Express assumes by contract. And it's their lease contract with appellant Mark Schumacher in which Relay Express assumes liability for occurrences while he's using that vehicle in their business. And the policy also excludes those liabilities that are assumed by contract.
You started out with the four basics that we have in all of these cases, and I'd like to do the same thing, starting out with the basics of an insurance contract. This company's name is Relay Express.
Yes.
They're in the business of delivering goods and materials or something.
I believe they're a courier business, yes.
Okay. They bought an insurance policy.
Yes.
For what purpose?
To insure themselves.
Okay. To insure themselves against any claim of liability by an injured victim.
I don't believe it would be any claim. It would be claims that are subject to the policy.
Somebody who was injured during the course of the Relay Express's business. Is that fair?
Assuming that person isn't insured under the policy, yes.
Let's assume Relay Express had their own truck, and their own truck runs over somebody. You cover that?
Yes.
Good. Now they lease one. And they say to the lessor, we want you for Monday through Tuesday to deliver to Chillicothe and back to Columbus. Their policy cover that truck?
Depends on whether or not the owner of the truck is operating it.
Well, that's who they lease it from.
But they lease the truck, not the driver.
I thought I understood this case.
Is your position that, just all I mean, just totally understanding, the company says to Shoemaker, we want you to drive for us, whatever the contact is, we want you to drive for us. And you can drive your own truck. And so they agree that he can drive his own truck, but they're going to lease it. So there's some benefit, I would guess, there. They say to him that we want to cover ourselves in case somebody's driving your truck and injures someone else. We want to protect ourselves. So we buy insurance that says that liability insurance says that if this truck's involved in an accident, your company is going to pay us for the amount that we have to pay someone. But we're not going to have that insurance cover you in case somebody sued you for your negligence while you're driving your truck in our business. So you better get your own policy. So he gets his own policy to cover him. Is that the situation here?
I believe that is an accurate representation of the situation.
And your point is, I guess, what's wrong with that? And why can't there be that kind of business transaction, I guess, where the company can limit its liability to the policy and tell the driver of the truck, you get your own because we don't want to be responsible for your driving. That's
in fact, the lease agreement that they have with Mr. Schumacher indicates that if he wants additional coverages, Relay Express will assist him in obtaining those different coverages or with higher limits or whatever.
Now, there's a difficulty here in the fact that if Roadway is going to be Roadway's an old company up north. Relay. If they're to be liable, somebody sue Relay, it's probably because Shoemaker has acted negligently in driving the truck. Yeah. So doesn't the liability flow from him to the company from him? That's a difficulty.
Well, under the policy, the two separate contracts, Mr. Schumacher is an independent contractor. He's not an employee of Relay. Relay was not his employer. Yes, he's driving his truck during the course and scope of Relay's business. He causes an accident. I don't think the motorist policy provides coverage for them.
For If he causes the accident, he's driving his truck and he causes the accident, then the motorist policy does not cover relay. That's your position.
I don't believe it was a relay. It was not Schumacher.
It doesn't cover. No, it doesn't cover. It wouldn't pay who? Schumacher or relay? Or both?
I don't think it would pay.
If he has somebody else drive his truck.
So they have no coverage.
Why would they buy that
policy?
All
right.
Because, as you said, I guess it's somebody else, which doesn't happen. I mean, we have to face that people do loan their trucks and their cars to other people driving them, or sometimes they don't loan them and they get driven anyway by others. So your position is that it covers it if Schumacher is not the driver, but somebody else drives his truck.
Correct. It's covered.
Did Relay have a whole fleet of police trucks?
Your Honor, I do not have any idea. I would assume that there would be more than one, but I do not know what number there is. Relay has never been a party. All they did for me was enter into an affidavit to identify the lease contract.
Let me come at it differently. In the normal course of Relay's business, did they put other drivers in the vehicles they were leasing from their employees, or did they ordinarily put the driver on their company business, sign them to their own vehicle to drive?
I don't have any idea what the answer is to that question, Your Honor. I do not know what the standard policy was for Relay Express at that time.
Matthews, you've used your time. Can they finish 30 seconds?
I thought you were just too briefly. Your question, Your Honor. I think the contract addresses it to some degree. Because the contract says that the lessee, which is my client, is going to get exclusive use of the vehicle. And if you look at the contract, if you're asking what Relay Express anticipated, I think if you look at the parties' agreement, you'll see that they anticipated my client as being the person in exclusive control of that vehicle, and it states so in the contract. I don't understand his argument at all that this vehicle isn't insured, that Relay Express isn't insured. The exclusion only relates to my client for liability purposes. It just says it's under the definition of insured, and it excludes him for liability purposes as an insured. It doesn't exclude Relay Express. Relay Express has liability coverage for that vehicle. If my client's using it, or anyone else is using it. And I think that's clear from the policy.
Thank you, Matt. This case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.